This is ESPN Radio.
On night one of the NFL's 2021 season, when we've got actual football being played, the Bucs and the Cowboys getting ready to take the field, we have had no shortage of news around the NFL. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. As you heard in the SportsCenter update there from Doug Brown, we've got TJ Watt, star pass rusher for the Steelers, signing a four-year, $112 million deal with up to $80 million fully guaranteed. And we've got the other side of things here as well. The Baltimore Ravens, more injuries in their backfield. This time, running back Gus Edwards, as well as defensive back Marcus Peters, according to Adam Schefter, both fear to have torn ACLs after today's practice. And so, for more on this, we're heading to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to our ESPN Ravens reporter, Jamison Hensley, now. And, Jamison, what more can you tell us about what went on today, the circumstances surrounding these two potential injuries?
Yeah, I mean, they were just having kind of their normal practice. They usually shift with a Monday night game. This is kind of like their Wednesday practice, their first main practice heading in for that season opener at Las Vegas. They weren't in full pads, so it wasn't full contact out there at practice. And from what I've been told, towards the end of practice, Marcus Peters, their Ravens star cornerback, as well as Gus Edwards, who just became the starting running back just a week ago, both went down with knee injuries. They had to end practice early. The players are going to have further testing, but the initial diagnosis, from what I have been told, is both with torn ACLs, which means Gus Edwards and Marcus Peters will be both out for the season.
Jamison, focusing on the running back position, knowing how important it is to that Ravens offense, I know they went out and they signed a couple of guys, a couple of veterans to their practice squad, but who are some of the names that we would anticipate being in the starting lineup or playing a significant role when they kick off the season this Sunday?
Yeah, it's going to be Tyson Williams, and he was on the practice squad a year ago. They really liked him in training camp and in the preseason, ran extremely hard. Every time you heard from players and coaches, they talked about his physicality. But the expectation was, especially a couple weeks ago, he was going to be the number three back behind J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards. Well, in the preseason finale, J.K. Dobbins, he tears his ACL. He's out for the season. And then today, Gus Edwards is out for the season. And then just last Thursday, the Ravens lost a third running back, Justice Hill, to an Achilles injury. So the Ravens now have had three running backs go down with season-ending injuries in a span of 12 days. That's why you have Tyson Williams, a practice squad player who has zero NFL carries. He is now slated to start for the Ravens Monday night against Las Vegas Raiders.
Jamison, for you and the folks that have been around Baltimore camp this preseason, have seen all this, has there been any commonality to all of these injuries? Has there been something you can look at, whether it's the physicality, the circumstances, that might give us some clue as to why this group in particular has been hit so hard?
No, I mean, and you saw when J.K. Dobbins went down against the Washington football team in that preseason, it was just he was sandwiched in between two defenders and, you know, he got hit. Justice Hill, it was his Achilles. It wasn't like he took a blow to it. He just popped his Achilles. I don't know the exact details of today, but it was, from what I've been told, it was not a full contact practice. And, you know, Gus Edwards, you know, he tears his ACL. And this is a player who has been durable throughout his career. I don't think there's any kind of trend right now that you can come, you know, say, oh, this is kind of what's happening here with the Ravens running backs. All you can kind of chalk it up to right now is just really, really bad luck.
Jamison, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball, Marcus Peters the last couple of years has been that guy opposite of Marlon Humphrey, and you know that that corner opposite of Marlon Humphrey is going to get a lot of attention. Knowing that Wink Martindale likes to bring a lot of pressure, leave those corners in one-on-one situations, who's going to have to be the guy to step up and fill that void if Peters is out for the season?
Yeah, it's Anthony Aber. He was a fourth-round pick from a couple of years ago, and you know, Don Wink Martindale, the Ravens defense coordinator, has been raving about him. He said even early on that Anthony Aber was their third-best corner on this team behind Humphrey and Peters. And the Ravens do have a lot of depth at corner, but what you can't replace is Marcus Peters' ball skills. And his, you know, he's the ball hawk on this defense. He has 31 interceptions since 2015. That leads the NFL by a mile. I think the next closest is 22. So you can replace him as far as having a guy that has experience, has talent. What you can't replace is the turnovers that Marcus Peters creates. And I think that's what really takes a toll here for the Ravens. They feel like they can kind of withstand and put a quality player in Marcus Peters' place. What they can't have is a guy that makes the exact same plays as Marcus Peters.
Jameson, we appreciate you giving us some time on short notice. Obviously, unfortunate circumstances for the Ravens, but thank you so much, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Have a good rest of your show. Thank you.
Jameson Hensley, again, our Ravens reporter, as Gus Edwards and Marcus Peters reportedly down with what appears to be season-ending ACL injuries. And Chris, I mean, looking at this team now, we've talked about the AFC hierarchy a lot during the last few days, during the last week or so. I mean, this is a Ravens team that we thought, all right, maybe due for a bounce back year, open up the passing game. But you look at this offseason timeline. Lamar Jackson has missed time during training camp with COVID. You've had the wide receiver room all banged up, including your star pick, Rashad Bateman, out of Minnesota, who had groin surgery during camp. And now three backs in your running back room here. This offense just seems like it could go from one of the league's biggest matchup nightmares to one that now could be a part of a team that risks missing the playoffs.
Yeah, and the thing that we talk about with that Ravens offense is the evolution of it, right? Like, we know that they're going to be able to run the football, and even though it's kind of been a running back by committee, like, you feel like losing the kind of talent that they had at the running back spot is going to be hard to replace. But beyond that, just seeing Lamar Jackson being able to be a threat as a passer downfield, you feel like being able to, when you have that running game take a hit, it's going to almost limit what they're going to be capable of in terms of expanding what this offense looks like. So that's the biggest concern for me. Like, the Baltimore Ravens had to be on the list of teams that could contend in the AFC, right there with the Buffalo Bills and the Cleveland Browns and the Kansas City Chiefs. And so with all of the injuries that they have going on right now on the eve of the season, it's hard to envision them being able to play and compete at that level with those other teams.
Yeah, we know. I mean, football's about playing your best stuff in the NFL in December, peaking at the right times in this. But, I mean, your team can't get healthy at the right time with guys on the shelf for the entire year. And, I mean, Chris, just for this team mentally, I think about going through this kind of rash of injuries before the season even kicks off, before you've even played it down in this upcoming year. We talk about hope springs eternal during the offseason. Mm-hmm. The Ravens got to be walking around there like it's the morgue. I mean, everyone's got to be looking, wondering what – you get to that feeling sometimes where it's, man, what's going to happen next? We can't get out of our own way right now.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we talk about an NFL season being a war of attrition. Like, to have this rash of injuries happen on the eve of the season kicking off, you just wonder – are the Ravens going to be able to overcome it? Like, you can't help but think that they're going to get off to a slower start because of all of the key parts that they're going to have out. And so is there going to be enough time for them to be able to catch up, to form an identity and try to move forward with that? I don't know, especially when you consider the division that they're playing in with the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Cleveland Browns. So, I mean, it's looking ugly right now for the Baltimore Ravens. I know a lot of people pick them to win the AFC North, but I don't know how you can have any degree of confidence that they're still going to be able to pull that off with all of the injuries that they're going to have to overcome.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, if there wasn't already, I got to imagine significant money starting to point the Cleveland Browns' way as that runway seems to clear out more and more for a team with a lot of expectations for the first time, really, heading into this 2021 season. Coming up next, though, we'll try and figure out how to help you put your money in the right spots heading into this weekend. Our guy Stanford Steve stopped by with some of the best bets heading into the college and NFL weekend. That's coming up. That's next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Great expectations in Big D. We'll get to the Cowboys upcoming season in about 10 minutes here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., and Chris Canty. We're hoping to talk to Stanford Steve with us here shortly. You can catch him out, Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast, with Chris Felica giving you great gambling tips heading into the weekends up here. So we'll help you get your money right with Stanford Steve here in just a quick second. But looking at the game tonight, Chris, I think I just saw on Caesars as much as a 9-point favorite right now for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers here. Are you surprised by that one at all?
I'm a little bit surprised by it. I know this game opened up at 6, and just seeing the money pour into the Bucs, I guess a lot of it has to do with Zach Martin being out. But, I mean, I can't believe that so many people are just jumping on this Bucs thing and saying, you know what, there's no chance that the Cowboys keep this thing closer than a touchdown. So I'm surprised that they think it's going to be such a one-sided affair to kick off the regular season. But at the same time, I'm not surprised because we are talking about Tom Brady.
We are talking about Tom Brady. I just look, and I know it's a small sample size, but when you look at the first 4 weeks for Dak Prescott last year, it was Big 12-style shootouts. It was run-and-gun football. And even if you want to say, yeah, those yards were when he was down, he was still getting them back into these games. And so with that kind of potent offense, they're never really fully out of it, are the Dallas Cowboys. So that's going to be interesting to watch that come into play. But for more on what's in play this weekend, we're going to head out to the Goodyear Hotline now to talk to our friend Stanford Steve. Again, Stanford Steve and the Bear Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. What's going on, brother?
What's up, fellas? How we doing?
We're doing good, man. We got actual football going on tonight, so life is doing all right finally here. And we wanted to start with that game for you, Steve. We were just talking about it here. I've seen 8 points. I've seen up to 9 points right now in favor of the Bucs going into the night. Is that too much for you, or you think this is the respect that they deserve?
I sort of think it's the respect that they deserve. You look at what Tom Brady's done in these season openers. We did a thing on the show with Scott last night. He's only lost one of these off a Super Bowl win. They have all returning starters back on their offensive defense, which were both in the top 10. And then you got Dak. You know, Zach Martin doesn't look like he's going to play. Lyle Collins is going to be his first game in about 2 years on that O-line. You know, are the Cowboys going to be able to get Zeke going? I don't think so. You know, with Levante and Devin White in the middle of that Bucs defense, it's a tough ask for Dak in his first game back to go up against a defending Super Bowl champ. So it's a lot of points. It's almost too much. I don't want to give that because you feel like Dak's going to be throwing it when they're down in the second half. But it's so hard to go against Tom Brady in a situation like this.
Stanford Steve, I'm going to ask you about the team that was on the wrong side of Tom Brady's latest Super Bowl win, that being the Kansas City Chiefs. They're playing host to the Cleveland Browns. They're 5.5-point favorites. I know a lot of the conversation around the Cleveland Browns is whether or not you can trust the quarterback. Last time these two teams hooked up in the divisional round, it was a fourth quarter game. What does Vegas have to say about that line, and how do you see that one playing out?
Yeah, I think, Chris, it shows you a lot of what they think of Cleveland and the roster. You know, OBJ's back. You know, you got Jarvis, and everybody wants to talk about Baker Mayfield. And, I mean, that's a 22-17 game. Cleveland was right there on a brutal fumble in the end zone at the end of that game last year. I do expect a lot of points to be scored in this game. Cleveland's got 9 new starters on defense, and that's included, I believe, their first-round pick, Greg Newsome, out of Northwestern. He's going to start at corner. I would think Andy Reid's going to try and go at him. And when you look at Mahomes in September, he's 10-0, 32 touchdowns, and no picks. And one thing I will point out, Chris, I know you played in that stadium. You know, it was a quarter full last year in that playoff game, obviously with COVID and all that's going. KC's going to be rocking, and I think it's going to be a pretty hostile environment. But I think Cleveland scores enough. I look at the total of 54.5. I think that game might go over, knowing the capability of both offenses there.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to Stanford Steve on the Goodyear Hotline. Let's finish this off. This feels like the all-narrative bowl here. Green Bay on the road at New Orleans. You've got the Last Dance Packers going up against Jameis Winston Saints. Packers right now favored by 3.5. Steve, what are we supposed to do with the Saints, especially early on right now with the new quarterback?
Man, anybody else need a storyline? Because this game could borrow. They could let them borrow a couple here. I'm fascinated to see what Jameis brings to the table this year, guys. And I'll be honest, Drew Brees hasn't been good in the last couple of years. And I know that defense carried him the last two to get as far as they did in the playoffs. But Drew just couldn't do it. You know, he couldn't get the ball down the field and take the pressure off and help the run game at all. So I'm expecting big things from Jameis. I mean, he's a guy you know, you could say what you want about the turnover, but he could still can make every throw there is to make in the game. And, you know, they get Lattimore, you know, on the defensive side to go against Devontae, who didn't even play last year when they played. But the Saints do have some turnover on that D-line, and they probably needed, you know, some stability at the other corner. But I would take my shot with the Saints here getting points. It's been pointed out the game's in Jacksonville. But I like the capability that Jameis brings. You combine that with Sean Payton, who's probably the most fearful, you know, play caller there is in the NFL. I like the combination, and I'll take a shot with the possibility that they bring to the table as far as an offense goes.
Stanford Steve, I want to flip over to college. I'm a proud Virginia alum, ACC guy.
We
got
the
Illinois Illini coming into the town. We're 10-point favorites. Now, I know Illinois kicked off the season with a big win against Nebraska, and then they took the L last week. So tell me how you see this game. Tell me how you feel about Virginia and me potentially laying 10 points and taking my Cavaliers.
Well, here's one deal for you guys. I don't know. I've never been a part of one of these. This is an 11 a.m. Eastern kick. Like, I think of the players here. That's it. That's an early wake-up call to get that pregame meal in 4 hours before kickoff. So I look at Illinois here, Chris, and listen, Virginia had their way with William & Mary last week, as they should. Took care of business and didn't have any problems there. But when I look at Illinois, I look at a team who's struggled, obviously, through the years, you know, recently. And it struggled because their offense turned the ball over constantly. And with Brett Bielema coming in and having to go to a backup quarterback, probably the second series in that Nebraska game, and then playing last week against a really good UTSA team, they haven't turned the ball over once. And to me, that just shows me the effect that Bielema is having on that team and the idea that how important turnovers are. So I think Illinois goes in with a decent game plan. I do think Virginia's going to win the game, but I think Illinois keeps it close, as they just announced too. Sikowski's going to start again, as he did last game also. But I think Illinois keeps it close. Cavaliers win the game.
All right, Steve, if we're going to just keep playing the alumni bowl here, Toledo rolling into South Bend, the Irish giving 17 in this one. We saw him on the road at Florida State, had to battle through some adversity late in that game. Do you think the Irish got what it takes to actually win big for once?
Well, it's going to be tougher than, you know, people are thinking right here. Mike, I mean, you know, the left tackle's out now. They just announced that. I think that kid's going to be a top five pick when he's draft eligible. He's out 8 weeks. They got dinged up on special teams. I mean, it was a costly win, but most importantly, Notre Dame got the win that they needed to last week. And that's what it comes down to. I thought Cone looked phenomenal when he had time to throw. I do think Notre Dame will get the run game figured out with, you know, moving some guys on that offensive line. But this is more about the other team. Like, Toledo has legit guys on their team. You know, you talk to scouts who, you know, go around to these smaller schools. There's three guys. They got a corner, a safety, and a defensive end who have possible NFL aspirations. And I just think about Toledo. Like, they have an offensive capability. They got 21 starters coming back. They got talent all over the place. Candle does a great job coaching them. And I just think about the, you know, Mike, you can't get this in your head because you didn't live it. But when teams come to Notre Dame, they kind of get fired up to play at Notre Dame. And I think Toledo is going to, you know, come out with a good game plan. I'm not saying Toledo's going to win the game. I think they keep it close, knowing there might be a little hangover effect after Notre Dame, you know, shuffling some things around. But I think Notre Dame scores enough in the end. But I think Toledo keeps it close within that number of 17 points.
Steve, we're going to finish this up with an in-state rivalry in Iowa featuring two top 10 teams, the Hawkeyes and the Cyclones. The Cyclones are laying the 4 points at home. How do you see this one? And if our fans want to get involved with this one, where should they put their money?
Well, I look at Iowa State fans, and they got to be thinking, will it ever end? You know, Iowa's won 5 in a row in this series, and they've turned the ball over once in those 5 games. And I think that comes to an end this week. I think Iowa State has the goods on defense. They've been talked about all offseason about how they returned all the starters, and they have veteran leadership coming back. The game's at home. College game day is going to be there. The atmosphere is going to be incredible. Probably one of the best that we're going to see in the country. So I feel good with the offense. I know everybody makes a big deal about Iowa State not having a good showing last week against their in-state school, the FCS Northern Iowa. But I think Brock Purdy and Breece Hall and the stud tight end Charlie Kolar get it going. So I'll take Iowa State and I'll lay the 4 points there.
Awesome stuff. You can check out Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast wherever you get him. Follow him on Twitter at StanfordSteve82. Check him out on the Late Night Sports Center with Scott Van Pelt. Steve, always a pleasure, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, fellas. Have a good one.
Awesome stuff there. Reminder, guys, college football is back Saturday night. Great out-of-conference matchup. Michigan hosts Washington, presented by Dr. Pepper. Coverage begins at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Washington coming off a tough week one, going to try and bounce back against the Wolverines. Coming up next, though, we'll head to tonight's matchup in the NFL and try and figure out what this season needs to look like for the Cowboys unless they want some major changes starting at the top. That's next. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We'll talk to Calvin Watkins coming up in the next hour here, covering the Cowboys. Get you ready for tonight's game because we're getting close. We are now inside the three-hour mark here, an 8:20 kick for the Cowboys and Bucks, Chris. And
Oh, yeah. Can't wait for it. Now, Mike, I got to ask you, when you were showing up to the stadium, were you an early bus guy or a late bus guy? Because you know that early bus gets there with 3 hours before kickoff.
Chris, I've always been an early bus guy. Even now, going to cover college football games, I'm always trying to get there way too early. Like, you know the makeup, O-line, D-line's a little bit different. Like, we're the neurotic side of the ball, so I got to be there early. I got to go through everything, make sure all my stuff's lined up here. I was very type A like that. What about you?
Yeah, at the beginning of my career, I was a late bus guy. I was like, all right, I want as much time as I can to myself before we actually have to be at the stadium. But it's amazing. As you get later into your career, you become an early bus guy because you got to make sure you get warmed up properly. It takes a little longer to get it going. And then, of course, when it comes down to getting the Toradol shots and the hot packs and all of that other stuff, like, you got to have some time before you get ready to put those pads on. So at the end of my career, I had to be an early bus guy, but it's not like I really wanted to, but it was one of those things out of necessity.
Yeah, Chris, I am truly amazed now. Like, I sit here as a 32-year-old, so not an old man by any means, but whenever I go to work out now and I'm doing nothing, I'm foam rolling for a half hour, I'm stretching out, and I'm looking up my buddy Kyle Rudolph getting ready to play his 11th season now with the Vikings, or excuse me, with the New York Giants now, and I am wondering how in the hell folks are doing this so late into their 30s, and in Tom Brady's case, into his 40s here, if my body hurts this way as just a normal person.
Yeah, I'm still scratching my head on how Tom Brady's being able to pull this off, but I mean, it gets to the point as a professional athlete where it takes longer for you to warm up than it actually takes for you to play the game. Like, that it comes to that for all professional athletes if you're fortunate enough to play long enough.
That's Father Time continuing to win. So that's the dilemma for a lot of players heading to the stadium tonight here. Which bus are you going to get on to start things off? But once we get there, Chris, I think the Cowboys are such an interesting team this year for all the change reasons that we've talked about. One of the things that we haven't really set up, though, is like, what does success actually look like in Dallas this year? Because I don't think any of us look at them as true Super Bowl contenders here, but what does 2021 look like if all of a sudden we're at the end of this year saying things went well enough for the Cowboys for them to feel good about, for Jerry Jones cutting all these checks to feel good about?
Well, Mike, I know that everybody says it's cliche that it starts with your division, but I mean, when you look at the NFC East, this is a division that the Dallas Cowboys should win. Every team in your division has questions at the quarterback spot. Dak Prescott is the best at that position by far when you compare it to what the Giants are rolling out there, the Eagles, or the Washington football team. If you look at the head coaches in the division, I know that Mike McCarthy has underwhelmed in his short stint with Dallas, but he still is the only head coach in the division that has a Super Bowl win on his resume. So I just feel like when you look at the big picture, when you look at the rest of the division, this is one that the Dallas Cowboys should be able to take control of relatively early on. And I feel like it's getting to the point with this core of players where if they don't do it now, then when is it going to happen? Like, it feels like this is the Dallas Cowboys' best chance at being able to win the division and secure the best opportunity for them going into the playoffs this year, just because everybody else in the division is kind of in that rebuilding mode. So I just feel like it's all out in front of the Dallas Cowboys now. Jerry Jones has wrote a lot of checks, paid a lot of guys premium money, top of the market money at those spots. It's now starting to get to the point where Jerry's got to get some return on that investment.
Yeah, Chris, I completely agree with you. Winning the division this year is a must based on how it's currently constituted. If I'm going to look at the rest of this team, I think you've got to see three things, right? I think you've got to see Dak Prescott look like he did the first four games of last season. If he is healthy, which we know that shoulder is a question, there's got to be that kind of performance here after all the writhing around his contract. I think you've got to see that defense at least be middle of the pack. You've invested a lot of draft capital in them in the last few years. You've paid a bunch of those dudes on the D-line and that linebacking core. It's time to see some results. And you mentioned that core. The offensive line, Zach Martin, Tyron Smith, Lyle Collins, all have been dealing with some injuries. We know Connor Williams and Tyler Biadasz, their center, younger bodies in that group, but the three I mentioned before have been the core. They have not been healthy around there for a while. And Chris, when you talk about what we do with this team after the season, you've got to get answers about those guys' ability to get through the majority of 17 games for you and be there at the end of the season when you're making that playoff push. Because if not, you're going to have to start going back to where they were in the mid-2010s, which is investing high-end draft capital in that position, because this team has shown it is just entirely different when that group is on the field and healthy versus not.
Yeah, and the unfortunate part is the last couple of years, they haven't been healthy, right? Tyron Smith, Lyle Collins, and Zach Martin, they're all making top dollar when it comes to their respective positions. So, yeah, you've got to make sure that those guys are going to be healthy and going to be available, because that is a big part of the identity of this team. The Dallas Cowboys in 2021 have to be led by their offense, and it starts up front with that offensive line. If that group isn't dominant, not just good, not just serviceable, but dominant, I mean, the Dallas Cowboys season is going to be sunk in terms of them being able to realize the expectations that the owner has for them coming into this season. Keeping in mind, Jerry Jones made the move to pay Dak Prescott all that money this offseason because he expects this team to compete at a championship level. He paid Dak $40 million a year. I mean, you don't do that unless you feel like you have a team that's capable of being able to at least contend. And so for the Dallas Cowboys to be able to do that, they've got to make sure that that group up front gets it done. And like you mentioned before, some of the young players that they invested draft picks in the last couple of years are going to have to show up and they're going to have to play. That group is definitely going to have to come a ways from where we saw them last year at the bottom of the barrel when it comes to NFL teams, NFL defenses. Those young guys are going to have to step up and be impact players.
And they already cashed the chip. I mean, they fired Mike Nolan after one season there. If this team doesn't win the division, if we're not talking about the Cowboys as a playoff team in 2021, I think Mike McCarthy's job's on the line. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility based on what we saw from this team already turning over major coaching last year. So lots to keep an eye out on that team as we head into this season. A reminder, guys, trains appear to be further away and moving more slowly than they are. If the signals are on, the train is on its way. And remember one thing, stop because trains can't. Coming up next, though, we will see college football playoff expansion was the conversation all summer. Why it may be coming to an abrupt end very soon. We'll get to that after this word from 5-Hour Energy. Now, guys, what's your ultimate game day experience? Tricked out man cave? Maybe some deluxe tailgating? No matter your dream, enter the 5-Hour Energy sweepstakes for a chance to win $10,000 and make your ultimate game day experience a reality. To enter, buy any 5-Hour Energy product. Upload the receipt. It's that easy. The 5-Hour Energy Football Sweepstakes. Enter today. No purchase necessary. Must be 18 and a legal resident of the U.S. Ends December 10th, 2021. For official rules and how to enter without purchase, visit the number 5HESport.com. That's 5HESport.com. Void where prohibited. Back with some news about the college football playoff expansion next on ESPN Radio. Get back to paydays and some rough days in the NFL in about 10 minutes here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, because it really has been a tale of two cities in one particular division on how your day might have gone if you're a fan right now. Waiting for night one of the NFL season to start. We're inside 3 hours. We got Cowboys. We got Buccaneers. But, Chris, we've also got stalled conversations in the world of college football here. Nicole Arbach over at The Athletic does a great job covering college football. Just put up an article today on the four factors of college football playoff expansion that are likely going to put that conversation on ice. For everyone that forgets, back in June, there was a four-person working group of the College Football Playoff Management Committee that included Bob Bowlesby, Greg Sankey of the SEC, the commissioner of the Mountain West, and Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick, who went to work on a proposal, an idea for a 12-team expanded playoff. the top six conference champions, so the highest ranked six conference champions, and then six at-large teams would have made it in here. This expanded playoff would have paved the way for the group of five to have a way into this, would have paved a way for Notre Dame to continue to be involved in the playoff, as well as conferences like the Pac-12 that have been shut out for a while, finding their way back home. And, Chris, it seems like that Texas and Oklahoma move that everyone got a little caught off guard by, including Bob Bowlsby, who was on that commission, might now actually derail this thing. It's understood that there's going to be a vote where you'd need a unanimous vote to pass this thing through to go even further. And, Chris, it doesn't seem like we're getting to this point. Hurt feelings might actually derail what I think for most fans would have been the most appealing option. But now as we sit here, we know it's never been about competition. It's never been about the betterment of the sport. This has been about dollars and cents, and it remains that way.
Oh, no question about it. That's what's driving the conference realignment, and that's what's kind of pushed everybody to the table when it comes to discussing what the future of the college football playoff will be. But in examining what's going to happen, the first thing that jumped out at me in this article from The Athletic is how Bob Bowlsby still feels some kind of way. Because when they referred to the SEC and Commissioner Greg Sankey, he used the word betrayal. Like, he's still hot about what happened in Oklahoma and Texas brokering a deal to become a part of the SEC and crippling the Big 12. But in looking at the proposed 12-team format for the college football playoff, it almost seems like it's in the Big 12's interest to go ahead and go with this new format, just because it does guarantee them a seat at the table in terms of being able to have a conference champion inserted into the college football playoff. So with Bob Bowlsby kind of taking the position that he's taking, it feels like he's cutting his nose off to spite his face, because we know how much it means to these conferences to be able to have an opportunity to get a team into the CFP.
Yeah, Chris, I couldn't agree more on that front. And I think, listen, we know there's going to be a television component to this because that's where a lot of the money is. Maybe some of these conferences want their TV partners to be able to have a say in how this goes later on. If they renegotiate while this is happening, ESPN, who has the rights to the college football playoff right now, would have exclusive negotiating rights there. So that's certainly going to be a factor in these things. But when I look at this, because we'd be talking about this going through 2025, Chris, if you're the Pac-12, can you afford to potentially miss out on the college football playoff until 2025 the way that you've been tracking right now? If you're the Big 12, who just lost these two teams or is going to lose these teams in a couple years, is in the process of potentially adding BYU, UCF, Cincinnati, can you really afford to put yourself in a position where all of a sudden a four-team playoff is? That conference is going to get worse. I mean, those four teams coming on, they're good programs, there's growth potential. But they ain't Oklahoma, who's been representing you by and large in the CFP here. So, again, we know the group of five is going to pound the table because this is their way in. But, Chris, I guess we should not be surprised anymore that when it comes to the people brokering these are big pocketbooks, these are big paydays in the conferences, mm-hmm. and these are big egos that feel like they had someone go behind their back in this spot in SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, who was in these meetings with them, and they felt like some type of way about here. It just seems unfortunate because, again, I'm sure if you're a coach involved, if you're a player involved, if you're a fan of any of these, this is holding back the thing that everyone's been crying out for so long, where the math only changes by one. Oklahoma making the CFP as an SEC team versus a Big 12 team that would just be replaced by another Big 12 team, mm-hmm. rising up, having that opportunity, seems like bad calculus for this decision-making.
No, it does. And that's the most frustrating part about this, because it feels like the players, the coaches, and the fans are the ones that lose outright. Like the money is the thing that's driving it, and we all think it's in the best interest of the sport. If you do expand the playoff, if it does look similar to what we see at the FCS level, where you actually do have a real playoff type of scenario where you got multiple rounds, like, it just, to have it limited to just four teams, there's always going to be that conversation around, did the committee actually get it right? Are we talking about the four best teams in the country? And I just feel like that goes away when you decide you're going to expand the playoff field to 12 teams. Now, I know that they have an 8-team format that has kind of been discussed very casually, but I mean, in terms of the current proposal, it doesn't feel like it's got a lot of momentum, just because a lot of these conferences are thinking about what's in the best interest of their individual schools, and it doesn't feel like making that move right now makes the most sense for them in terms of the dollars.
Yeah, the unfortunate reality for a lot of these people that are feeling very some type of way about the SEC is, at this current juncture, because of how good the teams are, they are always going to win. No matter which one of these scenarios you put out of here, short of being able to introduce conference limitations on teams going in, which seems like a dangerous precedent to start setting in this. The SEC can sit pat here because no matter what, we're going to be talking about them at the end of this year, potentially fielding two playoff teams. And if you expand, it's going to be more of the same. So again, the college football playoff expansion sounds like it is primed to stall. Coming up next, though, we'll get to a payday and a very bad day for two teams inside the same division in the NFL next on ESPN Radio.